Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are joined by very special bun parent indeed, Sarah Century. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm great. I think that that's maybe the most accurate way anybody has ever introduced me on a podcast, because usually it's my accomplishments. But if you ask any of my rabbits, my biggest accomplishment is delivering their treats on time regularly.
It's true.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be recording, and by the time we end, it'll be salad time, because salad time is a strict 7 p.m.
Like at my place, I'm less strict, and Nick and Nora will just come over and stare at me while I'm gaming. Like, Dad, do you know what time it is?
It's 7 o'clock. Their clocks are so scarily accurate.
They are the reason we need to get rid of daylight savings.
It throws them so badly. They're like, wait, what? Why are we getting salad early? We're going to get another salad in an hour, right?
Yes. They wish.
All right. So everyone on our podcast that listen, Asta just, she head on the floor, is very sleepy right now.
She ratcheted up the flop nap to 11.
Everyone knows that we have Nick, Nora, and Asta. Sarah, introduce us to your rabbits.
Okay, we'll check my unconventional naming situation, because I tried to go Pokemon, so I have two that are named after Pokemon, but it ends there. That's only half my rabbits, so I don't know what happened, but I just went off on one. So we have Bulbasaur and Eevee, and Eevee's nickname also is Little Boy, because he's the only boy of the whole bunch. Oh. And he is full of personality and likes to chase cats as if they are his mortal enemy. And then I have Lilu, who is the one that I found, like your rabbit, who was abandoned in Minneapolis. Don't abandon rabbits, just a note. But I have this wonderful rabbit, Lilu, who is just a beautiful white rabbit and is the most docile, loving rabbit of all time, and accompanied by three siblings who are all bullies because they have grown up together. And then the last one is Tawny, who is the smallest of them all. And she was named after Tawny the tiger because I had to syringe feed her throughout her baby years. And so it was constant pep talks. I was like, you're going to do it. You're going to be a star. You're going to get through this. And just every day giving her these pep talks. And so Tawny is the name of the tiger in Shazam. So Tawny the tiger is like the tux wearing Captain Marvel, I guess he's still called sometimes, but basically Shazam character. And So I was like, you're Tawny. You're going to be a big tiger. You're big and strong. And so that was her name. But yeah, completely all over the place with the naming convention, pretty much. But four.
Yeah, and I feel that people really undersell white rabbits, especially red-eyed whites. There are so many rabbit rescues nationwide. So if people ever are curious, find one and adopt a rabbit that is up for adoption. Adopt, don't shop. A lot of the time, the red-eye whites are left behind because people think they are creepy or scary. And it's like, actually, they're the most loving rabbits that you can find. They're the type that will want to cuddle.
Yes, yeah. Nick and Nora have zero interest. But Asta will come up and visit me while I'm gaming in the morning, do some couch zooms, boop my leg to make a tunnel for herself.
Wants pets, like she will just lay there and you can just give her tons of pets.
She loves the bun-bun massage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bun bun massage where you like just work down the body and
she just like activates a gravity field and then just
it's a puddle of Asta.
A floof.
I love mine has brown eyes and she has a little bit of like a reddish tint. But she is nonetheless a white rabbit. And I have heard that as well, is that people find the ones with red eyes to be off-putting, and it's just shut up. They're great. They're so great. Like, I mean, rabbits are wonderful, but like the ones that will actually let you hang out with them rule so hard.
Yeah. And it's a weird breeding thing with white rabbits. So like the Californian, that's what Asta is, with the gray nose, gray ears. That type was bred to be meat rabbits.
Yeah.
So they're bred to be big and docile. So they're supposed to be really calm and put on a ton of weight so that they provide the most meat. But the outcome for actual pets is like, they're so sweet and nice. She is spicy. Like if you get in her space, the spice, the Scoville factor for her is like real high on the chart.
But she hasn't bitten us.
She's bitten me, but
she hasn't bitten me.
Lulu bit me a little bit, mostly before she got spayed. It took a long time to get her spayed because I was moving. And so there was just a whole thing where it's like, not only is it hard to get vet appointments sometimes with rabbits, especially spay appointments, when especially where we were at in Minneapolis, they were booked out to infinity. It was like, sure, we can get you in 6 months. And you're just, wow, I can't wait that long. That would be a mistake to wait that long. But yeah, so it was a whole drawn out process and she would come up and bite me a little bit. But I felt a lot of sympathy for her in those moments because I was like, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie. you should be fixed by now. Like, you know. So that was the system failing, Lulu. I'm just like, you're not a bad rabbit. The system just failed you.
And as you know, the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, there's a handful of exotics vets. Yeah. And you book out. When we rescued Asta, it was
a team effort. We were so lucky.
Yeah, like I was on Facebook. This really kind lesbian couple found her and brought her into their house, but they're like, we can't keep her.
We have our own pets. We have aging parents we're taking care of. Like, we don't have capacity. And all these other people commented unhelpful things.
They're like, oh, you should get a pen. And I was the only one to be like, I will help you with this rabbit.
Like, connect you to Minnesota Companion Rabbit Society, who is our go-to for hay.
Yep.
Because we can get it by the 50-pound box load, which will last a few months.
Yeah.
So you at lunch, Daryl got the care from my place, went to work, picked up the bun. I made the appointment. And luckily, the Mendota Bridge construction traffic was allowed from Minneapolis to St. Paul, but it wasn't going east to west, the opposite way.
Yep.
So everything aligned. They got the vet appointment just fine.
And that's where they misaged her and they're like, oh yeah, she's at least a year old. And that's where I booked her spay. And only to find out once we brought her into the Companion Rabbit Society for like a nail trim, they're like, oh no, like
she's
a baby still. Like, look at it. The trick to telling a baby domesticated bun is ear size. Their ears are oversized when they're super young. And they're like, no, look at her ears. They're so big for her body. Like,
so cute when it's like that, though.
We got her spayed like right on the border. Like, it was just okay for her to be spayed, but it was almost too early.
Dang.
She has since tripled her weight.
You can never tell. Like, I mean, I took my rabbit Lulu in to be like, hey, what's up with this rabbit I found?
It's always the initial appointments like, here, this bunny, it's cute. Is there anything wrong?
Yeah. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, she's so lucky to have you. It's like, I would argue that she was very unlucky to be put out into a parking lot, but also she can be lucky. I also feel very lucky because it was I had lost a rabbit really recently. And so I was like, I will never love again. And then by the time you see Lulu, you know, and she needs help, it was like, oh no, like I have to be a good person again, and take this rabbit in. And yeah, it was such a good idea. I wish, you know, just that half second that I doubted that I was like, I'm at capacity. I can't handle this. And honestly, Lulu has been the glue that held the rabbit family together. So I'm really glad I took her in.
Oh no, is that how we end up with four rabbits?
I'm just trying to like casually sell you all on four rabbits. No, it's hard. It's so hard to have rabbits. I mean, it's hard to have the four for sure. I think I benefit in that they are so bonded to each other. So a lot of their stuff, they're playing around with each other. And so I become slightly like obtrusive, I guess. Like I come in and they're like, whoa, we're like hanging out. Could you give us some space, you know? And I'm just like, okay, hurtful, but okay. Or I think maybe Lilu slightly views me not necessarily as an owner, but like as a co-parent of these three goblins. And so, yeah, I don't know. And once again, we have hijacked just into pure rabbit territory, which we, just so everyone knows, there was a good half hour, I think, before the call officially started, where we were just talking about our rabbits.
It's yes. True. We just love them so much.
Yeah. And it's rare to find people, especially where I'm at, people just don't really have rabbits as pets very much. And so, I mean, there are some people, but you just don't see it that much. And there's like breeders out here and stuff. So I don't, anytime I want to start a rabbit conversation, I'm like, this could go badly.
Oh yeah. So, at the state fair, one of the master gardeners was like, oh, we raise rabbits for meat. And I was like, oh.
Goodbye. Goodbye forever.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh yeah, my grandma did too. Like whenever I lived in the Midwest, and that was my first introduction to rabbits, actually. But even then, I loved them. I remember always taking care of them and stuff. Just absolutely loved rabbits, even from the beginning.
Oh, there's a very sleepy Munch.
Oh yeah, Astor has roused herself to munch on some hay.
Her eyes are half closed.
Yeah.
Oh my god, they're so cute when their little grandpa's falling asleep in the easy chair.
Yes,
it's so true.
Does that too. Adorable. So
you two have been on Gray Muck and Lane, Chad's podcast, before together.
Yes.
We talked about white rabbits.
Yes.
The horrible person who is nonetheless amazing. I love her so much, and I'm still waiting for her to make a big comeback, but she hasn't quite yet.
Oh.
Yeah, she's really sort of in the background right now. And like Chad has drawn us into like group text where he's like, oh my God, White Rabbit is in this Blood Hunt thing. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll probably wait for that to hit Marvel Unlimited.
I might not. I've already gotten a few. But Asta just did the thing where she eats a bit of crinkly hay and you can watch it rotate all the way around.
It goes clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on their jaws.
It's true.
So you were saying about Gray Mulkin.
Oh, just to remind people that you're awesome and that you do all sorts of cool things, if you want to remind the audience of the cool things that you do.
Yes. So you could introduce yourself aside from being a bun parent.
Which is really the highest credential that we care about.
So, Sarah, what are you up to right now?
Right now, I'm working on a pitch for a comic book, but before this, I've been doing the podcast Best Issue Ever, which is exactly what it sounds like. Somebody tells me one of their favorite all-time issues, and we just get into it. I have so far been completely sold on every single issue that anybody's brought to me. So it's been good for me because it just means I'm reading a bunch of cool comics, often ones that I've already read, but not always. People are 100% allowed to choose things that I've never read. And so that's been a big one. And I have a book of horror stories that is called A Small Light and Other Stories, not to be confused with the Nat Geo series, which is also called A Small Light, but not by Sarah Century. You want the one by Sarah Century, because that's me. And it is a horror story, very queer, has a bunch of little vignettes, I guess, of sort of intense interpersonal drama that is so intense that it becomes horror, I guess.
Yeah, because I saw you recently. I know that you're connected with Cursed Morsels or Cursed Morsels Press, because they put out a lot of really great independent stories. Yeah, and they're based here in Minneapolis, right?
It's Weird Punk, actually. Cursed Morsels, I actually believe I've talked to the founder maybe twice. Hasn't put out anything that I've done. However,
but they should, by the way.
But they should if they're up to it. And also the publisher Weird Punk, which is run by Sam Richard, who is a local to Minneapolis publisher who does a bunch of pretty rad horror stories, honestly. Sam's work is great, and he's incredible at curation, and he does a lot of anthologies that I've taken part in. Most recently, there is the Profane Altars, which is a weird sword and sorcery collection. So it's sword and sorcery, but horror at the same time. Oh, and this completely ties into everything we were just talking about, because my story is 100% an ode to being a rabbit parent. It's a horror story, but it's a kind of, as all sword and sorcery stories are, you have your kind of barbarian-ish character, and my character finds a rabbit. And the story goes on. It's a horror story, so it's not like 100%, but I will tell you, I can spoil it. The rabbit is okay. Okay. The rabbit is fine in the end. I could never.
Yes, absolutely. So that's from Weird Punk, right?
Yeah. So the great. Profane Altars is a new anthology that's up for pre-order right now. And I've been in a few of their anthologies. They're always awesome. They work with a lot of really great creators, a lot of great queer creators who are doing kind of subversive horror stuff that I think is always my favorite stuff to read. Is the kind of publisher where whenever I was a kid, I would have been like, what? I can't believe that this exists even, you know? So I really enjoy them. And they're local to Minneapolis, and Sam is very cool. Whenever my book came out, it was like, okay, cool, like, let's figure out how we're gonna go about this cover. Do you want to just hang out? And so we just hung out on a porch and drank, I think, a six pack of Miller Lite or Milwaukee's Best, I don't know which one, but tall boys. And we're just like talking about different cover possibilities. So it was like maybe one of the most chill and entertaining business meetings I've ever had.
That's awesome. Yeah. We are very honored and grateful that you are here joining us today.
Yeah, me too.
So for our rule of three, we approach people and say, give us one of your favorite characters and give us three issues to get to know that character. So why don't you intro who you selected?
Oh, I was so excited. I think this text came back to you in maybe 2 seconds after you said, hey, what character would you like to talk about? Because I wanted to talk about Amora for a really long time. So I chose Amora the Enchantress, who is one of Thor's many, many adversaries and an on and off love interest for Thor and other characters. We'll get into that maybe a little bit. But she is, in this era, I'll say that Amora changes with time. So this is an important character to notice that, you know, even now she'll show up in a very prankish capacity, but there are stories that flesh her out and give her a little bit of pathos. I didn't really want to get into that too much because I really think that she's very fun when she's just petty and shitty. I love her during these, and I can't help but love her. This is a character that I've always adored. Anytime she appears, I'm just like, yes, I love you so much, because she's kind of a shit and I don't mind to see it sometimes. I feel like that idea of the woman who is treating Thor as a conquest, much the same as Thor often treats women as conquests. And obviously, once again, that's a character that's had a lot of characterization over time and has developed and changed. But there was a time where he was just kind of a brash jerk, I guess, and kind of a himbo, and he didn't treat women very well. So I appreciate that she kind of flipped the tables on him a little bit and was like, hey, I am going to be the one who uses you to social climb, and that kind of vibe. And I love that she was gay besties with Loki. They're really cute in this. I think that they're very, very queer friendship where they're both just like, let's just go be mean to that jock.
I mean, himbo was definitely an adjective that came to mind when I was thinking about how to describe Thor in the, not Thor title, but
Journey into Mystery.
Journey into Mystery. I'm still relatively new. So
yeah. So this came about because we should probably tackle her her first appearance first. Yeah. And that's Journey into Mystery 103. And that's because Marvel, it's business related. So they transitioned a bunch of their titles from the 50s. And then when they started establishing these characters, they were inserted into titles already around. So you had like Strange Tales, which I think Strange Tales was where like eventually we had Doctor Strange splitting it with Iron Man for reasons. So Journey into Mystery was where they stuck in Thor.
Yeah.
And eventually it became the Thor title, and I think it's with Journey into Mystery 126, thereabouts, that transitions to being Thor's.
The Mighty Thor, yeah.
The Mighty Thor then took over for like 127. They kept the numbering.
Oh, that's good.
They dropped the name. So this happened throughout the 60s at Marvel.
And sorry for the weird face I made. Asta did a big stretch. But then her back feet sort of slid back on the little picnic mat under the hay bag.
You sound exactly like me, where if I'm on any call, I'm just like, and my rabbit's doing this, and my rabbit's doing this.
I'm like, and I can't hide my facial expressions. It's just like, oh, hello.
So what? This is relatively early in Thor's appearances.
Yes.
This is where we're sort of getting his rogues gallery established. And yeah, we have two of them here. We get Enchantress and the Executioner.
And yep. Executioner, not Executioner, because there is no song.
Yes. It's not the X version or usage of Executioner.
Carl, the character, the Executioner.
Or the storyline that does not involve the character named Executioner.
Totally.
For reasons.
Yeah. So, Sarah, we have a lot going on here to establish Thor as a character, and we're seeing how he's transitioning from Thor to Dr. Donald Blake.
Right.
He's still in his cane era, yeah, where he needs the hammer or his cane, but especially the hammer. Like, when he is Thor, he cannot be parted from it for more than 60 seconds.
Oh, otherwise he turns back.
Yes.
Right.
Is there a curse involved? That seems like a curse thing.
Totally. Odin's like, you're too full of yourself. You gotta go experience some hardship. Therefore, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And Thor is like, but father, and is very upset about it. But that's basically it. You have this kind of dad who's being a jerk and also a son who's being a jerk. And therefore, it all combines into he needs this thing.
And at the beginning of the story, he's coming back from his previous adventure, and mm-hmm, he's like, I got to transition back, and he's so tired that he falls asleep in his lab.
Yes.
And his love, Nurse Jane Foster, is like, why don't you take a nap on this couch?
Oh, she tucks him. I think I somehow missed these panels where she's tucking him in.
Yes.
Which, as someone who gave platelets, where you sit there for like 2 to 3 hours with needles in both arms, but they're so nice because they tuck you in and they give you a movie to watch. And just like being tucked in is so nice.
And this is where we get some of the flashback that is always very present in 60s comics, because you have to establish a character and what they're doing, because it could be an 8-year-old picking this up off of a spinner rack.
Oh.
any week. But then we get Loki. And this is where it gets cooking, I feel.
Cooking, but he stole like a scarecrow costume.
I love this. I love that Amora is just like languidly kind of slouching across the bed, which is my favorite thing. She just is always doing that. It happens multiple times in the issues I've chosen.
Yes, where she's just like, I'm here on my furs.
I'm so hot, just laying in bed. And then she sits up all of a sudden and is like, oh, how you must hate Thor, Loki. And I just love how scandalized she is. I love how thrilled she is. I love how much she's just here for the drama in this scene. It's just such a good introduction, because she's just kind of messing around. And then she's just like, I'll help you with this guy because I want to be Miss Thor, because then I'm going to get a bunch of power. And there's not really any other motivation to her interest in Thor, which I think is really fun too.
Because
she's not messing around. She's not here because she likes him. She doesn't think he's smart or cool. She's just like, he has a lot of power that would be so beneficial to me. And this is also, I'm going to have an ongoing, and this is why Amora is such a queer character note, but she has that femme fatale-ism that was like very much like, I'm just going to mess around with these men's lives and then leave. And that's basically what she tries to do through this issue. And I think that that is the best. That's why I love this so much.
She's very much like, I'm fucking hot. So I'm going to go down there and I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
Not going to lie, I love her outfit a lot. Like,
her outfits, they're all so good. And I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just got so excited because lest we forget that she looks amazing every time she shows up.
As Demanda Martini would say, there's a dumb headpiece. And I love her tights with the circles on it.
Oh, yeah. Like, those are so good.
I, not going to lie, if I have a crisis and I dye my hair blonde because I'm queer, like, will I get some green tights like this? Maybe, and do a gender bend cosplay because, like,
she still wears this. Like, that's it's so iconic that it just won't go away. This is what her look is even to this day. You see her and she still has the Kirby hat. She still has the circles theme. I mean, it's in the cape. It's just so iconic.
Oh, good.
She shows up. So she's about to leave Asgard, and she's looking like Shirley MacLaine in What a Way to Go.
Yeah,
in one of her dozens of outfits, where she's like, "I am in this
massive pink hood."
Yes, like, it's very much like the hood that they constructed to stay off of the hair. Like, it is wired up there.
There's architecture involved.
Yes. And then she is on Earth just in some furs.
Because she goes to the salon of one of New York's most exclusive fashion designers. And she's like, create a wardrobe for me immediately. The cost is of no concern.
Yes.
And this guy like falls over his face trying to appease her.
You know, that's Adrian from MGM.
Yes.
He is like, girl,
I got you covered.
Yes.
You're gonna look like a star, and she does.
She shows up to Don Blake's office, and she's like, "I'm sick,
doctor. I have a pain.
Can you my hand itches. Can you just put my hand?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so itchy." And she's like, "Oh, my face itches too. Look at it.
I think it's an allergy.
Oh no. Oh, I'm falling over." And. And she's like, maybe you should inspect my lips with yours.
Jane walks in and goes, fuck this, and leaves. She's just like, I'm pissed. Goodbye.
And he's like, oh no, Jane. And she's like,
never has anyone broken from my embrace before.
Yeah. I'm going to have to use my eyebrow and my wiles to figure it out.
I love that even though he is in the mortal Don Blake, he still possesses the strength of character of Thor. Well, I am strong too. I will not be defeated by man or thunder god.
Yeah, Then she takes the Bifrost Bridge back home. She's like, I'm walking.
She struts across that bridge like a cat.
She left her previous outfit behind, which is...
Yes.
Like, that, the red dress with the white fur was working, though.
Yeah.
But this works. I feel like she has this huge cape all of a sudden with the hugest hood I've ever seen. And
to match her... matches her little mini skirt. And...
Yes.
And then she's like, you know who's going to help me? The executioner.
This asshole.
Yeah, this asshole does not. He looks the exact same. Carl Urban channeled this appearance, I feel. And she's like, hey, executioner.
But Carl Urban is hot.
is still.
He is. I think that there's something maybe a little bit hot about the executioner in a weird way. I've spoken as a lesbian, so correct me where I'm wrong. But it's like he's totally what she wants. He's going to be there for her, basically. And that's, I think, the big attraction. And I think, too, with Carl Urban, that was a little like the vibe of just this kind of he could be easily manipulated. I think for Amora, that is very attractive.
Still play to her strength, but with minimal effort.
And she's like, hey, Carl Urban, so I stole this photo off of the doctor's desk and we need to fuck her up. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, her reasoning of, oh, well, if he likes Jane, I should just kill Jane.
Yes.
Just clear the way to the top.
Yes.
Pragmatic.
And so he's going to go search for her because she ran out of the office. We're back on Midgard. And he's like, well, I can probably search for her better as Thor.
But he does, as Don Blake, talk to the landlady, and this might be just because we picked up a copy of The Women for me, but I would love to, like, imagine Marjorie Maine as the landlady. Like, she's such a good landlady in one of the Thin Man movies. I can't remember which one.
Ma Kettle.
She's Ma Kettle.
No, she's great. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yep.
Like, I feel like people are talking about, oh, so-and-so is a gay icon, but also, like, where's Marjorie Maine on that list? Where's Josephine Hull, the aunt from Arsenic and Old Lace, and Harvey? Like, I just love these crabby old women from the early movies.
So this crabby old woman is like, I don't know where she went.
I'm her landlady, not her keeper.
Yeah. And then Thor goes to the police. And is like, hey, I need your help, but also you need my help? And there's an 8-foot character in strange armor carrying a battle axe, causing panic among the people. And Thor's like, sounds like the executioner. yeah, I know who this is. Like, there aren't like 500 8-foot Norse things with axes.
They see this guy and they're just like, he with you? And Thor's like, yeah, I verily.
And so executioner is searching and finds Jane with her suitcase in a crowd. And he, quote, using his axe to cut through time and space rather than frail human flesh, the executioner whirls it about him at fantastic speed. He creates a vortex and, like, throws her away into, like...
into limbo.
Yes. And Thor gets pissed. Battle ensues, and this is where executioner gets real cocky. He's like, I can use my axe to, like, toss your hammer away. And Thor's like, you want to bet? And calls Mjolnir back and knocks executioner about the head and face.
There is a test of strength, and then the executioner tries to pull an Iceman and entomb Thor in ice, which doesn't really work.
And he's like, I want your axe. And Thor's like, okay, fine. You can have, or I want your hammer. Thor's like, have my hammer. Give me the girl. And then Jane Foster reappears. And then executioner realizes, I can't lift this damn hammer.
You can have it back.
I made a bum deal. And it's an interesting story. Like, so what?
And then the enchantress is like,
pissed. She is just like, you fool.
That was not the deal we made. Why are you betraying me like this? And turns him into a tree.
Yep.
She's obsessed. She loves to turn people into trees.
Yeah, not the.
I mean, if I could turn people into trees, I absolutely would too.
Not for the last time in this episode. Will we see someone turned into a tree?
Yes.
By this woman.
She realizes she failed as well. And she's like, but I'm beautiful. Like,
but you could still get it. Last chance.
And he's like, nope. And he creates his own vortex to send them back to Asgard.
Yeah, they're not strutting across that rainbow bridge. They are being whirled above it.
Yeah, and...
yeah, they're leaving the byes on the Bifrost
bridge. And so Odin is real worked up that he's falling in love with...
How dare he still be in love with a mortal woman?
Yeah. So that's the end of the story. It's only half the issue, or like 14 of the 19 pages in Marvel Unlimited.
I mean, I know that we still have talked about it, but I just love that first appearance so much. Just the lounging.
Yeah. The luxuriating.
I love her. Every time she shows up and she's just being hot on a bed, obviously I am the audience for this, but I'm also just like, what are you going to do that's super mean? I mean, it's one of those people who you would just want to be around because you're like, what? You know, people where you just go, this person is making me go out and I know that I'm not going to have a good time, but I'm going to have a time that I'll never forget. That's how I feel about the Enchantress. You would want to hang out with her just because you know that you're just along for the ride at that point. It doesn't have anything to do with you. You're a side character at best in the Gamora story. And that's why I love her.
I could see her looking over and just saying like, oh, you're still here.
Yes, I am. Yes.
And I've been taken in the show the whole time.
Like, I'm having the time of my life. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Where do you want to go next? Do we want to go Avengers or Dazzler?
I say Avengers because I think that that's chronological.
I think so. Yeah.
But I could be wrong. And who cares if I am?
I mean, according to...
It is.
Yeah.
So this is Avengers 83 for those people following along. This is from November of 1970. We have Roy Thomas, who has taken over the writing duties for Avengers. He's on it for quite a while. And it's Roy Thomas being very Roy Thomas with his scripting. The amount of dialogue... and word balloons you get in a Roy Thomas comic, even up until like the early 90s for West Coast Avengers, is just extreme. Mm-hmm. The man is going to write the fuck out of whatever issue it is. And this is where we get basically, I think this is the, I'm trying to think of my Avengers history, like the fourth or fifth pretty solid combo of membership for the team. You have the Vision, Scarlet Witch, Black Panther, Quicksilver, and Goliath, which it's Goliath 1 if you're looking in like the character indexes, because this is...
Wait, who's the second one?
Oh, Goliath. There are like 5 Goliaths.
Oh, because one might be Hank Pym and one of them is Hawkeye?
Yes, Clint.
Yeah, Barton. This is Clint, right? Yeah. And Clint is an asshole.
Clint is an asshole, but much like you in Enchantress, where you're like, I'm along for the ride, Clint in his harness, I'm going to go along with it.
The harness is there for the girls and the gays, as far as I'm concerned. It's like, yes. Whatever your actual intention with this was, sir, it appealed very specifically to a very specific demographic, and I think you know that.
So the cover, we see
the cover.
We have gay icon Valkyrie.
Yes, I think this is her first appearance, but she's not actually Valkyrie yet.
Right. So
more on that later.
Yes. And we get Janet,
coming in home through a secret entrance that only she knows about.
A vent, basically. It's a vent. She's going through an exhaust port. Like she is a torpedo from Luke Skywalker's X-Wing. And
the greatest opening line is Janet just trying to come home and chill after a chaotic adventure. And then it's all... Valkyrie is there introducing Janet to her own house, P.S., which is the funniest part of that. And she goes, greetings, Wasp. come on in, the revolution's fine. And you see the women all around the table. So the probably one of the most important things to say here is I would not consider Roy Thomas to be a feminist. Okay. And there is a lot of him dragging feminists in this issue. So trigger warning to anybody who goes into it. You're going to hear me say that I love this. And then whenever you look at it, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is very sexist in many ways. However, it is also awesome. And so there's definitely a line that we have to walk on this one where it's like her definitely being this kind of parody of women's lib, I guess, during this time. It's 1970, as you said. So this is all news to Roy Thomas that women want equal rights or whatever. And not to put words in his mouth, but literally those are the words that he writes. But she's so good in this. So we'll talk about that. But I want to just throw a quick little trigger warning out on that. Because the cover, once again, she has this moment where she says, that's the last time that these male chauvinist pigs are going to tell us what to do. So this is something that keeps popping up. Male chauvinist pigs is like used multiple times during the early days of Valkyrie. And it rules, but it's not intended to rule. Like this is supposed to scare boys.
And Roy Thomas, he recently appeared at a Comic-Con in North Dakota. And I was chatting with one of our mutual friends who I will not name, but I was like, oh, it'd sort of be fun. And the reaction was I wouldn't go and meet him. It'd be like meeting someone else's grandpa. And for real, like, yes, he wrote so much. Like at this point, there's a current controversy for people out there where Marvel is crediting him now as the co-creator of Wolverine because he edited that issue, which opens up a Pandora's box of like, are all editors co-creators of every character? Because that has massive financial implications for the writer and the artist now, where they would have to split things like three ways. If it's clean, if it's one writer, one artist, it's 50-50. But now if you throw in an editor, it's a third to each, and it's like, really? So Marvel in the past couple of months is like, yeah, Roy Thomas co-created Wolverine because he, one, is the only living person left from that group, and two, has positioned himself in recent decades, especially since Stan Lee passed away, as like Stan's heir apparent. Like Stan isn't around, so I'm basically the oldest guy around that was around for a lot of this. So I added my finger in everything here.
Oh.
Which, even if you're looking at this page that we just covered with the revolution's fine, Stan, at this point as editor, mandated his name as editor come first before any other creator at this time in Marvel. Where he's like, oh no, I edited Stan Lee, editor, is more important than anyone else in this book. So it's sort of that icky feeling.
Oh.
Where like the editor is the most or as important as the other creators. It's sort of bleeding over still from 1970.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Back to this meeting, we have all female superheroes here.
We have some guest stars, Black Widow and Medusa.
Medusa.
Because there's that few women. And so I would just want to say too, the fact that these are the only women is proving all of the points that are made in this comic. They had to bring in other female characters because there weren't enough women in the Avengers. So just making a note of that.
And barely, like the only other women in Marvel Comics period at this time, you have Sue Storm.
Sue Jean.
Jean,
are they still Invisible Girl and Marvel Girl?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep, definitely. Yeah.
I don't know if we've nailed it down on the podcast before. She didn't become Invisible Woman until like 1986.
Yeah.
What?
She had already given birth to Franklin and he was around for a couple years, and they're like, finally, you're the Invisible Woman and not Invisible Girl.
Oh, we've gotten as much out of you as we can from the maiden phase. You are now entering your mother phase.
Yes. And the only other one would have been Gwen Stacy, but she's not a superhero, so she's just going to college with Peter. So That's like the female roundup of Marvel 1970.
Oh, no. And from what I've seen from Chad's podcast, like, Jean was not treated terribly well.
No, no. It's like, boys, go out and do adventures. Jean, stay home. So there's this meeting, and
Valkyrie drags the male Avengers for filth.
Yeah, she does.
And she's right the whole time. She's just talking. It's the way that her dialogue comes across is very reactionary and kind of severe. But I think that it's to the benefit of perhaps the writer, but definitely to the male Avengers that she is framed in that way, because everything she's calling out actually is legit. Like,
yeah.
Why do they make you sit at home? You all are just as powerful as them. You know, it's if this whole story, I feel like everything that she's saying really makes a lot of sense. And then she gets... Janet's mad about it, but this is a rough era for Janet. I mean, I'm going to say that Janet suffers under Lee and then Roy Thomas. It takes, I think, until maybe like Roger Stern era before Janet becomes the Janet we love and know, right?
Is she? Yeah, and that's through Jim Shooter. Like, Jim Shooter had her get abused. Yeah. And then finally... Roger Stern comes on and has a great run on the Avengers title that really redeems her. That's where she becomes chairwoman.
And it's so good when she becomes chairwoman. So that's a character too that I easily could have chosen Janet, because that transformation is great. But here she's still in her like, oh, I'm the wife of Hank kind of mode. And when she is no longer the wife of Hank, things get so good for Janet. I almost can't describe.
I introduced you to Paladin. And I was like, oh, yeah, Jan just fucks him for a while. She just has fun. Like, she just has fun.
And the reaction, good for her. Like,
she hooks up with Magneto in Secret Wars because she's like, no one else is here, so I guess I will. It's just amazing. Magneto's just like Janet, you know, like very, you know, the gothic hero that he always is, or anti-hero, I guess. And Janet is just like, I mean, it's probably kind of a conflict of interest, but I'm in it.
Yeah. And sometimes I like to view, like, is she doing some of these things just to piss off Hank? And if so, even better for her. Like,
yeah, she becomes the leader of the Avengers, essentially, because everybody thinks that she's going to take time off. And the way she just walks in and muscles her way into leadership, I think, is just a masterclass. You're like, damn, Janet, you are incredible. She just walks in and they're all like, so you're going to need some time off. And she's like, actually, I was thinking I should just be the leader of the Avengers. What do you think? And they're like, no, because you need some time off. And she's like, OK, but I just said that I don't. So I'll just be the leader. Does that work? I've been here forever. I've been here more consistently than any of you. So does that work? And they're just like, and she's like, what would, do you have a good reason for not? And they're just like, no. Yeah, Janet should be it. It's just like the way that she just muscles in. Oh my God. The Janet podcast. That's my next appearance.
We get a story that I feel like is probably all the places where Valkyrie is recounting how she was a lab assistant. She was just ignored, like work was stolen. All I can think of is Rosamund Pike, but that's the actress. But it's Rosalind Franklin with the discovery of DNA, where Watson and Crick were like, oh, we're going to take your work. Oh, yeah. Look, we discovered DNA.
But slightly like, also Rosamund Pike and Gone Girl being like, oh, I'm so sad. Everything horrible has been done to me, because that's what we find out later. But it was so like her being like, everything was stolen from me. How sad. You should all be on my side.
And she somehow faints with a steaming vial and became Valkyrie. And now she is imbued with power. And male chauvinist pigs beware, that phrase again.
I love it.
And then she brings up all these great points about how...
And she's like, yo, Wanda, your brother is a fucking twat. And she's like, you know what?
He is.
Pietro sort of is.
And I do like how it's, Valkyrie points out, like, the headline was Quicksilver and Sister Capture Thief. Like, I mean, those headlines are still happening today.
Written by a man, of course. And it's just, once again, you can tell that the writer is being kind of a dick about this, but it's also, no, for sure, it was written by a man.
Yeah. And Hank Pym getting all the credit instead of Wasp.
And she's like, Natasha, how many times have you been asked to be an Avenger?
Or rejected from
being... Yeah. And Natasha's like, wow. And she's like, Medusa? So this man can't even talk to you and you're in love with him? Fuck him. Fuck him. You're hanging on every syllable that you can't hear.
Every non-syllable.
Yeah. And Medusa's like, wow, I have powerful hair. You're right. So it's like,
Valkyrie goes, all right, let's go beat some ass.
She's like, you ready to beat some asses? And they're like, yes, we are. And she's like, hop on my chariot. Let's go. It can fit four.
Because we're not taking a car that a man has made.
And they're like, you know where we're going? Rutland, Vermont. Which is an ongoing joke. It's
yes.
DC and Marvel. There's the Rutland Halloween Parade. It appeared many times in the 70s.
Okay, because I could not figure out what the fuck is happening in Vermont.
It's because DC and Marvel writers are like, wouldn't it be hilarious if we wrote about Rutland, Vermont? And Ray Thomas is like, this is great. I can write myself and my current wife into the comics.
I'm a celebrity there.
Yes.
When you say current wife, so...
Oh, no. By the time he is scripting West Coast Adventures, his wife is Dan Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, Jeannie is not long for that marriage. So.
Oh, no. In the interviews that you will read with her, you at least a little bit get it, because there just seem to be some workplace tensions, I'll say. And but also, she's a really good writer. So any person who can check out if her work is really sparse at Marvel, and I think that that was a big point of contention, I would assume. I don't want to say that I know these people, I would assume, but who knows? And I think that her writing is really good. She did a really cute Marvel Girl story. So there were still little glimmers with Jean, but I enjoy her a lot.
Because it's in the panel, it's such a not great interaction where she's like, oh, the Avengers, and he's like, cool it.
Yeah. Cool it, kid. It's like, oh, wow, who hasn't longed to be called a child by their spouse? No, that's it. I once again, not to cast aspersions on people who I do not know, but I'm definitely like,
now it all fits.
So the male Avengers are here in Rutland, Vermont, to take part in the parade, and they're like, Clint, can you just like walk and not be on the float? Because
you're not going to fit.
Yeah. And we see views of the parade, but who's there but the Claw.
I was like, what?
Yeah, the Claw with his little supersonic
hand.
Yes. We have... Oh, no.
It's hard because there's also villains in button costumes. Like, this isn't actually Doctor Doom.
Right. Yeah. And it's... not actually Nighthawk.
He's the Grand Marshal almost of the parade.
So regardless, attacks happen because it's the Avengers. So we're focusing a lot on the dudes right now. And they're getting their asses handed to them. Vision is trapped in
some concrete.
Tar.
Oh, because the asphalt has been melted. And if he can't phase without risking his android body.
Yes.
A whole wall falls down on Black Panther.
We get Whirlwind, who has to be gay with that outfit.
I mean, he has to be.
It's just a helmet, and then he's shirtless.
Yes. Pietro's trying to handle him, and Claw is after... Oh, it was Claw on Black Panther. Radioactive Man is there. And is dodging the tree that Goliath is swinging.
He is described like a fly as a muscle-bound meathead, which is our favorite kind of meathead.
It's true. It's a shame that he cannot be touched.
Yes.
But also, like, pot and kettle.
Yeah. Yes. Clint, take a look in the mirror.
With that harness.
So then we get Valkyrie riding in with the chariot. They're all coming in.
They roll in on a chariot. Yep.
As you do.
And they're like, these fuckers cannot even handle themselves at a Halloween parade. And they jump right into action. Like, Natasha has no time for this bullshit. She's like, I got my stings. They're going to bite you.
I mean, Janet takes down Mr. Melter. I don't know her. And then Natasha, like, they do a combo.
Yep.
Like, very X-Men Legends combo.
And Medusa uses her hair to great effect.
On Whirlwind. Yeah. Yeah, it's just that helmet that is definitely shaped like a thing.
And
some tights.
And we get Wanda coming in. As usual, you underestimate the power of a woman, Goliath.
Oh, yeah, because he's covered in concrete.
Yes. Foam?
I thought it was concrete.
It sort of looks like a foam party. It looks like Goliath is at a foam party, which Hank would. Not Hank.
Oh, it's perhaps Clint. Fool, but you've forgotten my cement gun. I mean, how could you forget?
A cement gun. So we're pretty far into this, and the women eventually triumph. Like, they actually did the work.
And then they just keep going and beat up the guys.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, oh, they're like, good job, ladies. And they're just like, go to hell. And then we get one of the best of all time panels is Valkyrie striking at them. And then it's not even a word bubble. It's just all across the top of the panel. It says, up against the wall, male chauvinist hangs. And you're just like, whoa. Yay.
Yeah.
The second wave feminist has shown up to beat some ass. This rule.
And it really turns a corner.
Yeah. Then they get the device. So the villains were after some doctor who was in the parade. And so they retrieve the device. It's supposed to be super powerful, but untested. And yeah. Valkyrie reveals herself as the Enchantress, and she's still got her tights that I love, and the miniskirt, and the sleeves, and the dumb headpiece.
She is thrilled to be back in her own skin, and this is something that I love about her, is she was cosplaying as Valkyrie, and now she's just like, yes, it's me, the Enchantress. So good.
It really, like, the yellow and black panel, like, the coloring is so good. Like, it's very Chernabog, like, summoning demons, like, the whole thing.
She's so thrilled with herself. I love it.
I feel like there's got to be some connection between her and some, like, reality show villainess.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen Real Housewives of New York, and this is a character on Real Housewives of New York.
And we get a lot of villain monologuing. Like, she reveals why.
Oh, yeah. Because she got cursed.
Yes.
She and Executioner were, like, you can either lose half your power or live in this dark, dank place. And she was fine as long as she had company. But then this blonde tramp in pink showed up and stole Executioner away. She had no, like, simpleton to be her minion anymore.
Yeah, and he's like, cry me a river like I cried over you. He's doing like the whole song. And yeah, it's so funny because then you see her with her hands in the air and she's like shaking with anger, being like,
and then she's like, Executioner left me, so fuck all men. Because that's what feminism is, but right, Roy Thomas?
That's how I feel, is that they have to make her do this. It's like, you know how for a long time in Poison Ivy stories, they always had to be like, and then she tried to genocide all the humans or something. And it's just like, yeah, because she made excellent sense every single panel up until then. She's mad at this guy because he's destroying marshlands. And so she's like, you know what? The world doesn't need another billionaire, but it can't survive without the marshlands. So my choice becomes clear. And it's like, that rules. But then you're also like, but she also has to be so over the top and like, oh, I don't care about human life at all. And like all of that, because otherwise we'd all be like, wow, she has an excellent point. And that's exactly what they do with the Enchantress here, where they go, she made every single point that she made all the way up until now was 100% accurate. And then she makes it here and then she goes, but actually a man scorned me and therefore I hate all the men. And you just go, okay,
yeah.
Right. All of her excellent points were just because she's angry at men. Gotcha. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
Oh, that's silly. I don't think she passes the Bechdel test in this issue.
Nope. Because she's always talking about how much is all men, even though she hates the men. But the part where she says, come on in, wasp, the revolution's fine, is maybe passing the Bechdel test.
And it's never looked back from that first page.
So then she's like, okay, like I used you against others, the masters of evil against the Avengers, and then you against the master. Okay, everyone's going to die now. And then Scarlet Witch is like, no, I have some chaotic powers.
I trapped you in a hex sphere and reflected the magic back at Enchantress. And she dissolved. She got atomized. Oh, no. Is Asta going to delete the whole episode?
I hope not.
Oh, no. Hello.
She has hopped up onto the couch.
Oh, are you going to come visit me? Are you going to go down? Can I get your tuft?
The baby has entered the chat.
She has.
Right there.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, boop, boop.
And just in time, the Enchantress, she hasn't died. At first, they're like, she died, right? And they're like, no.
Blasted to atoms. Sorry. Because when Executioner left, then she left that realm and her powers were halved. So she couldn't use like the full force of her spells or anything.
And Scarlet Witch is like, you know what? I knew that she wasn't like the real Valkyrie because she called Jan Wench one time. So
just like she used at me.
I totally knew, but I just played along.
Wanda's just like, I've got a bone to pick with you guys. And that's how it ends, is Clint is being an aggressive jerk and says, he calls them birds, first of all, which is like, dear God, the sexism, like, is so off the charts with this issue in a lot of ways. But then he goes, I hope you birds finally learned your lesson about that women's lib bull. No, the birds have not learned that, Clint. Thanks. You're not helping your case, P.S. And then, yeah, then what is it? That's what you think. Male chauvinist pig is what Wanda says.
Like, one of these days, cute. I love that Wanda threatens that the liberators will be back, right, Jan? And Jan's like, you know what? They might. Yeah.
Foreshadowing, because she is about ready to come back as leader of the damn Avengers. But we got to get this writer out the door for a minute. And then we got to get the next writer out the door for a minute.
Jim Shooter, who eventually became editor in chief.
Yeah.
Is the one who wrote not only Hank slapping Jan,
yes,
but also the infamous issue 200
with Ms. Marvel. Yeah.
Where Ms. Marvel sort of gets raped by her own son.
Her child.
To give birth to said child.
And ew. Everybody was like, oh, this seems fine. And then
I read some of like the commentary on that, and it's so bad. It's
yeah,
bad.
Carol's I was going to say essayist, I guess. The essayist, Carol Strickland, wrote about it and went to bat for this character in a way. And then Chris Claremont was like, yeah, what the like, and then that's how you get Avengers number 10. That's how you get Carol Danvers becoming binary. All of that is Claremont had really helped establish that character with Ms. Marvel. And he's like, God, that did suck that this happened. Like, no. And so he does this whole thing where she gets a whole brand new arc. But she does kind of struggle for years and years. The Captain Marvel stuff is relatively recent. So Oh man, yeah, that issue is rough stuff.
Yeah.
And doesn't she like take the Avengers to task for like, none of you believed me, none of you helped me?
That's in Avengers Annual number 10. Yeah, where she, it's where she is, she confronts them about it after the stuff with Rogue happens.
It's,
too.
It's up there. It's Rogue's first appearance that I have slabbed on the wall.
Oh.
There you have it.
It's a big, written by Chris Claremont, Avengers Annual 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Far out. Great. It's a really good issue, but it's definitely a hard read because I think before that they had really done what they could just not to address it. They were like, that was something weird that Jim did and we just don't want to talk about it. A lot of the reader responses were pretty benign that were actually saw publication at least. Nobody really seemed to be as mortified by it as most people now, of course, will read that issue and just be absolutely horrified because it's a horrifying story. But yeah, it wasn't until, Carol Strickland's essay, Chris Claremont kind of doing a rebuttal where he has Carol actually kind of reclaim her agency, but she's still really messed up from it for a long time. It's great storytelling because before that they were just like, well, now she's in space with her son husband and it's fine. And it's like, that's not great.
Yeah.
Like, oh, comics of this time and Avengers especially, I think had a lot of pretty notorious women's problems. Like they definitely did not, once again, Janet was not treated very well. Wanda is treated like an infant, like as Jean was often. Just an ongoing thing, but it does get better, I'll say, eventually. It takes some time.
And so if we want to speak of getting better, we have Dazzler number one.
Yeah.
for the final issue, full issue we'll discuss, we're going to touch on Defenders number four as well. In
yes.
Which will, we're going to go back in time. So Defenders four happens before this. Because Defenders started in the 70s. This is 1981, where they're like, oh shit, we have this disco property we need to do something with.
No.
Which is super interesting because this is 1981, but you can see on the first page, like they're crediting everyone who sort of helped Dazzler get created. And this is something you learned at a local con last weekend, where like they were going to do a whole album. And have a physical person be Dazzler. And then Disco went belly up and they're like, oh shit.
Disco's dead.
Yeah. So
we sunk a lot of money into this and now we're like, I don't know what to do.
So Dazzler number one, we see a bunch of these credits. And in the original credits, Tom DeFalco is listed last. He's the one who's writing the entire Dazzler solo series. Which is like 45 issues. Mm-hmm. The omnibus is coming out this fall. I am buying that rather than the individual issues.
And we met the matchmaker for his marriage when we did the Barbie episode.
Barbara
Slate.
Barbara Slate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she set up Tom and...
Hildy,
yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Hildy. What a wonderful name.
Yeah, and Hildy was the group editor for, I think, licensed comics in the 90s. She is definitely editor for Barbie.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that nugget of information from talking about the Barbie comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love, honestly, it's hit and miss. There's parts of the Dazzler series that I don't love, obviously. But there's stuff that, I mean, the first few issues are just absolute bangers, honestly. I loved this comic. Was this the first time you all had read this?
Yes. Apparently all the gays love Dazzler, and I'm like, yeah, sure, okay.
I'm in.
in a smile and nod situation.
Yeah, I had read this issue before. But definitely not from a bootleg file before they put it on Marvel Unlimited. And
absolutely not.
Some of those scans are really rough to read because it's just scans of the comics. So you're getting like the newsprint from 40 years ago scanned. So you're like, I can't tell what word this is.
Yeah, they haven't shown a ton of respect to recollecting this series. I will note that there are some bangers in here. Like the issue 13 has her fighting the grapplers, which is perhaps one of the gayest things I've ever read. And it's so worth it. But I also think that this is fun. This has a million characters in it. And I still think that Amora is the hero. Not the hero, maybe, but she's the main character at least.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that they're putting out that omnibus, because going back to my conspiracy theory about Marvel Unlimited and how they make money from it, it's just their secondary way to make money off of them scanning and recoloring everything for printed editions. And they're like, yeah, we already have the file, so put it up on Marvel Unlimited. So now I think issue 1 through 42 of Dazzler is officially on Marvel Unlimited.
Oh, I didn't know she went for 42 issues.
I think it's plus up to 45.
Yeah.
And then she had the Beauty and the Beast miniseries, where yeah, it was her and Beast for 4 issues.
Oh.
It is wild. It is a wild story, because that was back, I think, when Hank was still considered a possible romantic prospect. There were a couple of like kind of steamy moments with Hank back then. It's just kind of funny. And then it just, the idea that him and Allison, like the two egos, right? Like it would be like two Leos married to each other or something. It seems difficult.
So I encourage everyone to check out Dazzler.
Yes.
Obviously, we can honestly thank Queen Taylor Swift for actually pushing Marvel to do something with Dazzler, even in printed form. Because otherwise, I don't think we'd see it. They would not pay attention to this early 80s series.
There were years of me being like, every time I would bring it up on a podcast, just going, and this is going to be what makes Marvel finally put Dazzler on Marvel Unlimited. It did not happen. It took a very long time for this to happen. It was like Wheezy's X Factor. It just took a million years to get anywhere. And then finally you start to see them do the Masterworks collections, the Epic collections, the Omnibus. Thank God.
Taylor Swift was like, I want to be Dazzler.
It was more like she's embodying it as a big fan reaction, where it's like fan casting, where it's like, she would be perfect as Dazzler. There are still strong rumors about Deadpool and Wolverine that she will show up as Dazzler in a cameo. So it's been out there in the zeitgeist for a couple years, I'd say, at this point.
Okay.
There was a minute where it was Lizzo too. Like somebody was like, oh, I want Lizzo to be Dazzler. And Lizzo, I think, tweeted back something like, who's Dazzler? She seems lit or something. And everybody was like,
so
is it going to happen?
It really does take sometimes that fan reaction when we're talking about the original X Factor from the 80s, because Peter David's government team and then X Factor Investigations, so much better known.
Yeah.
And I think probably better written as a standalone book, but you get the original X Factor, which is the original 5 X Factor.
Oh, yeah.
In disguise for like an issue and a half. And then they're just themselves for like 40 more issues. And that's where you get Apocalypse, his first appearance. And
it rules. It's really good. I love it. I love that whole era, I think, is really great. The Leighton issues are rough over the first few issues, but then I think once Wheezy and Walt come in, it's great.
Yes. Bob Leighton, who we recently discussed because he did Hercules.
Mm.
Like, Hercules was his pet project in the 80s.
Oh.
He's the only one who wrote Hercules for years.
Yeah.
Like those Prince of Power minis?
Yes.
Oh,
exactly. And when you're speaking about epic collections and stuff, I'm starting to read Defenders right now.
Yeah.
And there's such a weird gap because they number everything on the back. So I have 6, 7, 8, and 9, which is like the last part of Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, what's volume 5? And you Google it. They haven't published it yet. They're there's a placeholder where they know exactly what issues will plug in.
Yeah.
But they have done like the first 40 issues, and then you skip ahead to like 90 something. And you're like, but what? It's Marvel's publishing game. It's very weird. And it's all about market research, and they know that Dazzler will sell because they have the attention of people, where they're like, it's been enough of a buzz where maybe we can sell enough copies of this omnibus.
for a long time happy to forget this series, because I think a lot of people would definitely call this a pretty sexist series overall. There's a lot of her dating a guy. This whole time period is, if a woman has a book, we better loop in a real boring dude and make him be the part that we all focus on. And that happens a lot to her. It happens to Spider-Woman. It happens to She-Hulk. It happens to Zatanna. It happens to everybody who is a woman, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of, it always kind of is a detracting element. And I think it makes it kind of harder to read. But at the same time, I mean, this issue is interesting because they do kind of try to give her this pathos, I think, at the same time. They're trying to tap in this kind of traumatic backstory of Dazzler, which I don't think we hear too much these days, because I think that who she is as a character has really kind of overtaken that. And we associate her more with her growth, maybe in the Outback era or something, as opposed to this era where it was kind of almost sold a little bit as a superhero comic in the beginning. And then it kind of becomes a romance comic. And then it kind of becomes, nobody knows quite what they're doing with the character, which happens to all of the women characters who have books for like a long time.
Oh, yeah. Because you have running at the same time as this, the original Spider-Woman run, just like you said. You have Savage She-Hulk, which again, like they didn't know what to do with Jennifer. So they're like, let's just end this. And then John Byrne did Yeoman's work and brought her into Fantastic Four, which sets her up for Sensational She-Hulk at the end of the 80s. So like
that you have.
Yes. So like it was taking these characters and I think it redeeming them. Like Claremont took Dazzler in the Outback era is like, oh no, like let's give more depth, like let's explore different ways and avenues this character can be effective. The same way like John Byrne can be horribly sexist, speaking of horrible sexists, John Byrne can really do a number, but at the same time there are times when he's very good with characters and characterization. I would say that he did really good work with She-Hulk. He also over-sexualized She-Hulk at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
it was the same with Sue too, where it's like Sue really becomes a character with Byrne. I think there's, you know, starts and stops before that, but Sue Storm really struggles, I think, for a long time, or people struggle with her rather. And I think that he's the one who makes her more of a person. And yet also you have to notice how sexist a lot of the stuff still is. I mean, it's not great.
Is it the boob window outfit?
No.
That's later. Although actually, I do.
Coincidentally, Boob Window, Sue, is written by Tom DeFalco, the writer of this very issue.
Yeah. I have my love-hate with Boob Window Sue Storm, because she's really funny during that time. It's like the Valkyrie thing where she shows up all of a sudden and is like, I'm in charge. And then it's just like, oh, she's possessed or whatever. But she got sexy because she was possessed. But I don't know. Sometimes it's like that's all you get for characterization from these women. So sometimes just seeing them be like tell Reed off is like what I'm living for, frankly.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, it's not great overall, but she showed up hot as hell and then was just like, you don't like my boob window? I'll shoot you in the face. Like, she's just like, she has a big stupid cable gun and is like, I'll plasma rifle you if you don't shut up about my boob window. And you're just like, God bless America, you know.
So Dazzler, back to Dazzler number one.
We can go back to Dazzler. Yeah.
So a lot of this we can explain, I'd say, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The point of this issue is to connect her to different points of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. So she immediately gets stood like Spider-Man steals her glory immediately. That's the way that they kick off her number one. This would never happen to a male superhero PS, but like the fact that she just is trying to help somebody and then Spider-Man's just like, bam, bam, bam. All right, you could go home. See you later, little lady, or whatever.
Yeah.
And she had it under control. Like she had her little radio. She had her roller skates. She had a trash can lid in each hand. like punching these guys out before Spider-Man arrived.
Yep. And he's like, oh, I see lights. I should go investigate. Oh, let me help. And then she's like, well, I guess I'll roller skate home. And this is where we get the backstory that you referenced, where she's like, singing is not cutting it. I am not making money. I'm 2 months behind in rent.
No hot water. She has half a box of crackers and not even some ketchup to try to pretend that it's tomato soup.
She also has half a cantaloupe.
Hell, half a cantaloupe. And you know who loves half a cantaloupe? Asta.
Yes, when you share breakfast with her.
Yes.
And then she calls the X-Men because we need more connective tissue to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And they all want to hear team. From her.
They're like, no. What's up, Dazzler? We're busy, but yeah. What's up?
Storm's like, it's really nice that you called me, but we're training right now because we get full on like two full pages of Danger Room.
Yeah.
And I do love like all the guys chipping over themselves to get to the phone, and Storm just floats above them and it's like, it's for me anyway. Yes. I got it.
It's for me.
Nightcrawler and Colossus. I just love them.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Dazzler, have you given up music to be an X-Man with us? And Allison is like, well, no. Okay, I better let you go.
And then she's thinking on her past where she wanted to be a singer, and her dad's like, you're going to be a lawyer.
But she had a cool grandma.
And the grandma is like, you listen to your music and dance to it as much as you want. And because she really wanted to sing at the school dance.
She did. And she got a chance and her powers manifested. And then these punks showed up to ruin the party. Oh, hello, Asta. Oh, hello.
She wanted to talk about Dazzler, too.
Oh,
so,
yeah, oh your tufts. Your tufts. Okay.
Okay. Just let the tufts go. For the listeners that aren't familiar, bunnies shed 75% of the year.
And Asta has some very tempting tufts I just want to pull out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So, okay, bye. So she's at the school dance and she's 14-ish. We know mutant powers manifest then. And they do, but then like some thugs come to the dance, random thugs, and they're
as
like,
yeah, they do,
and yes. They menace her in like a really creepy way.
Yeah. But she taps into those powers even more,
blinds everyone,
accidentally temporarily blinds everyone except for herself, and takes care of the problem. And then she's like, maybe I can make it as a singer. But she was still in school. She's like, fine, Dad, I'll play along. I graduated like top of my undergraduate class. And he's like, oh, good, you're going to law school. And she's like,
the law school I have chosen for you.
Yes. And she's like, the fuck I am. And then she becomes the Dazzler we know on roller skates. But, you know, disco sort of died. So her career sort of went with it.
Well, it's been... I don't think it really got going. I think it's been 2 years of like being a starving artist.
She has a very 80s couch with the frill on the bottom.
Oh yeah, it does.
It has that dust ruffle. And but now we cut to Asgard.
Yes. This is where our friend Amora shows up.
Because I was wondering where she was going to show up. And there's so much other heroes, other people involved. I'm like, okay, so here we go. We are at Asgard, and this warrior is on a quest, and he will not be denied entry to this place. And he beats up the guards. He's deeply wounded. I mean, it's a very fancy golden palace.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets to see Enchantress.
She is on a throne. She is, again, in repose.
Luxuriating.
Yeah. 100% tits out. She has all of these ladies all around her bowing, and that is where Amora wants to be.
She has a steaming turkey on top of some grapes.
Ooh, there might be plums. I'd be down for that.
And he's like, I am only here to serve you. I want to serve you forever. And she's like, oh, wow.
I can make that happen for you.
Make that happen.
And she turns him into a tree and she's like, you'll serve me forever like this.
Yes. Har, 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 har. I'm going to crack up every time I look at you, you loser. And I love this because she doesn't give a shit about this guy. But also, this guy sucks. He's really annoying. And he's like, oh, all I ever wanted to do was see you. And it's just like, this guy has women in his life, in his actual life, right? You know, it's just, that's what irritates me too. So I understand Amora being irritated by this guy and being like, all right, let me just go ahead and give you what you think you want. And there's just something wonderful about that and how much she's like, okay, well, that's run its course for me. I'm going to go check out my fountain. She's like,
that's true.
This was fun. It's going to crack me up every time I look over at that corner of the room and see this dipshit. But now I'm busy. I've got other things to do. And she goes and checks out her fountain.
Sort of.
An enormous fountain.
I mean, this guy doesn't last as long as her chalice of wine. Like, she finishes his transformation before she finishes her chalice.
Oh my God.
And that. She's like, ooh, there's something foreboding involves a disco ball and radios.
Which is so funny, too, is she looks in her scrying pool and she's like, disco.
Yeah. It's a rift in the space-time, and it's going to happen here. I must not. I have to be there when it happens.
It is happening at a disco. And then we cut to the Avengers. And Hank McCoy, being Hank McCoy, bouncing around, almost runs through Janet. And she's like, if I didn't turn into the Wasp, you would have wasted me.
So she stings him in the butt.
Yes.
And there's enough banter that Iron Man and Captain America have to come out and separate them.
Yes.
Even Hot Guy is there.
Yes.
But he's not in a hot outfit.
Nope, he's in his regular 80s outfit. We've moved past him being an escort.
I did enjoy a lot the Avenging Hour fashion show episode that we did with them. That was a lot of fun.
And you got to see all of Hank's, or Clint. Clint's slutty outfits.
Yes.
I love that Janet is the designer of everything, because I think that she's just kind of being like, no, Hank, this is fashion. You should totally wear this harness out in public all the time, because otherwise, how will people even know that you're an Avenger? He goes out in this harness being like, yeah, I do get a lot of compliments on it. It's just like, yeah, Janet knows what she's doing. Okay, once again, trying to turn this into the Janet podcast.
So Hank McCoy basically saw in the newspaper that a disco singer is needed. He goes to Allison's apartment and he's like, did you see this? And she goes, and so far the club owner, no luck. Everyone he's auditioned, they suck. And
they're no Donna Summer.
Then Enchantress walks in with a cigarette in a holder.
And she's vaping.
Yes, and she's like, you want to hear what I can lay down?
It's like she tried to go for people clothes and then gave up halfway through. And I love that. She's like, can't even be bothered.
She's like, I put a green sweater on. What do you want?
She's like, the most important part of an outfit, from what I've learned, is cleavage. And so I'm keeping my cleavage. And then I guess I'll just wear like one of those kind of basic like sweaters. It's like, yes, a huge shirt and then tights and then a hoodie cape.
Yes. Maybe.
It's, but her headpiece so too. Good.
But her headpiece is always intact. This, yes, is something she does not leave the house with. Her vape and her headpiece she needs.
The club owner is loving it. He's like, wow. And Allison's like, can I try it? He's like,
ugh. I guess. Well,
maybe, but.
And then she's like, look, these powers. Does her dazzling powers. And then he chooses her to be the resident singer. And Enchantress is fucking pissed.
I love.
And she is like, no, I don't think you understand that shit's going down at the disco and I need to be here. And she's so mad she blasts a hole in the wall and just like, walks out.
You're welcome, because I blasted the wall and not you minions.
I'll come back welcome. Whenever I feel like it. Yes. And you'll never know, but you'll see me coming. It's like all of the contradictions. She's like walking away with like 20 lines, just being like, and now I'm leaving. And you'll never know when I'll return, but I will return. And when I do return, you're going to regret that I'm here because I've returned at that point. So just wait for that.
And then I'll be back.
And then I'll be back. And you don't know what happens when I'm back.
I do love that. I gotta
say.
She's
so good. I mean, that's it. Is like, there's a lot of reads of this issue. First of all, there's so much of this issue that has nothing to do with Dazzler. It's just Marvel Universe of just kind of poking around, because I don't think that they feel like women can carry their own books very much. And no. So you have a lot of like padding in this. But whenever Amora shows up, because it's like Amora, you know, from what we've talked about so far, Amora is a character who shows up just to kind of be an adversary, but also one that doesn't necessarily have a point to being there other than just pettiness. She's just very vindictive for no reason. She's like, I'm bored. I want to take on the world's greatest singer and be surprised when I lose. Just this, she's so bored and she's just like, I'm gonna break down this wall, goodbye. But she's got her incredible cape as she leaves. It's just one of those of like, they're watching her walk away, like they're watching her go for sure. And so everything that she does in this issue is just so captivating, and she's always there to be kind of like the undermining factor for like the other woman, I guess. Like every hero woman, she shows up to kind of undermine them a little bit. She undermines Jane Foster. She undermines the Women Avengers. She undermines Dazzler here, or tries to. And I just kind of love that, because I don't know, it's very, it's I don't want to say that it's queer in like a bad way, because it sounds almost like you're just like, oh, she's like evil and undermining. And so it's very queer, but it's like, it's queer because it's like, she's never really there for the dudes. Like she's, even when she's trying to hook up with Thor, it's not really about Thor. It's about her friendship with Loki, you know? It's about what she wants and power, and she loves to take it easy. And that's, but she wants a challenge, you know? It just never really has anything to do with the guys, I guess. And so there's something still really fun and really kind of feminist and bonkers about her that I think is so fun. So it's like this whole era when she pops up, I'm just like, I just love her. Like she's just there to be kind of a wild card character. And I'm thrilled by that.
An X Factor, perhaps?
Yes, she's the X Factor. Yeah.
And then just briefly, Defenders issue 4.
Yes.
So this is just the beginning of the Defenders run, where it's an anti-team.
Yeah.
And you have Hulk, Doctor Strange, Namor, Valkyrie, the actual Valkyrie is here. And
this is where they make her be like herself, basically. Yes. The Enchantress Valkyrie also shows up in an issue of The Hulk, which is written by Roy Thomas. And it's very fun, much in the same vein as the Avengers that we just talked about. But this Defenders one, yeah, she shows up because the Executioner is trifling yet again. And it is like this story of she seduces the Black Knight to get her way, essentially, and to make the Executioner jealous. And there's some of the best lines that she has in this. The one that I love so much is where Black Knight goes, but I loved you. And she's just like, you weren't but my pawn, nothing more. And then she just sashays out of there.
And this is the same issue where Dane Whitman is turned into stone. He has that memory seared in his brain because he's in stone for like 7 years after this.
Yes.
Like what? Dane Whitman, the Black Knight, is a stone statue living at the Sanctum Sanctorum.
for 7 years.
Yeah, like they shelved that character for a long time.
And it's all the Enchantress just being like, actually, I think you're kind of a little jackass, and just walks off, and there he is. Also the horse thing, right? Because he has a horse, right? And then it becomes Valkyrie's horse. Yes,
Aragorn, because Aragorn. It's named Aragorn because Roy Thomas loved the Lord of the Rings,
right?
Oh. And named the Black Knight's horse after Aragorn, and that's why it's that. Even up until now, I think Aragorn is still around somewhere.
Yeah.
So totally. Enchantress just playing games again with
rips
a different
out
team.
His heart, doesn't care. Kind of seems to like Executioner in a way that I think is actually weirdly sweet. It's one of those ones where you're like, okay, like, this isn't a real relationship by any stretch, but it's kind of sweet. Like, yeah. in the way that Enchantress can be sweet, kind of, where she likes him genuinely, yeah. It seems like, and she's not comfortable with that at all. Yeah. So she's like, okay, cool. Well, you defied me, and so I must punish you because that's our role-playing game that we have. And
oh yeah, because she, the woman who takes Executioner away when her powers get halved, we don't even know her name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's just some woman in pink.
Yes.
Who either loved Hercules or Enchantress was pining after Hercules, and then Executioner lost patience. Right.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And it's just so silly because it's kind of this game that they play. It's not like, I don't think that Amora is by any stretch like head over heels over this guy, but I think that she has fun with him and she has like a degree of sympathy for him that I don't think the rest of Asgard does have. And so I like them in this just bizarre way. But with most of Amora's stories, I feel like she's a really underdeveloped character because I'd love to hear more about basically everything. So it's like, tell me more. But I think that her relationship with Executioner is kind of undersold as just her manipulating him, but he has his manipulations going too. He's also very violent. He has his own anger and his own angst. It's not all her. And I think that they kind of have a thing. I mean, it's not like the ship of all time or something, but it's definitely kind of cute. Like they kind of match each other in that way that I think is fun.
Yeah. And Enchantress, she's been present in the current Thor run too. Mm-hmm.
No, so not the tights.
She does.
Oh, good.
Yes. Al Ewing is writing Enchantress into the current storyline. They might move past it, but they might just know they're still in the rocks on limbo thing. So she's still around.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
She's still around. Even pretty recently, she popped up in Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel run. Ooh. And she just is there to prank the shit out of Carol Danvers and Doctor Strange. And it's oh my God, that whole run is, everybody has to read it. But that story specifically is really fun because Black Widow is there, like, okay, Enchantress body swaps Stephen Strange and Carol Danvers. And they're both very ego-driven, annoying assholes. And Black Widow's there to have to pick up the pieces. And they're like, oh, you're just loving this. And she's like, no, I'm not, because we're all going to die because you guys can't get over your own bullshit. Yeah. It's really fun. But I love that, like, Natasha is almost like the anti-Amora in a weird way, where it's like, Amora's just there to prank everybody and Natasha's like, can you please get your shit together? Like, she's pranking us, you got that right, like this is all just a prank. And they're just like, oh well, shut up.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to reading more Enchantress moving forward. How about you?
I like her a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll be excited when I see her.
Yes.
She's
yeah, so Sarah, thank you so much for joining us for this extended episode.
Yes, and it had to be.
It had to be. She deserves no less.
She would blow through the wall if we gave her any less.
Yes, it's true.
So still a threat.
And turn us into trees, which actually I wouldn't mind at this point, but
yeah, it's a cool gimmick.
So where can people find you, Sarah?
Not too many places, actually, which is okay. Kind of funny. I don't be found too much. You can find me on my website. I have a newsletter where I do send rabbit updates, just in case if that's of any interest to anyone. I don't know. But there's many rabbit updates. There's also updates to my general things that I'm up to. I've been doing a lot of photography and video work, so not necessarily stuff that... I have too much going on. So it all has to get kind of wound up into a newsletter, I feel like. Also, I'm not really on social media that much. You can follow me on Instagram. Again, there is going to be rabbit content. So if you want to do that, I'm at just at Sarah Century. And other than that, I'm just like, I left Twitter and I just, since then, I really haven't wanted to go to anything else. And it just keeps getting worse with AI and stuff. So I don't know how much people are going to see me on social media apps going forward, but that doesn't mean that I won't be in your hearts.
Yes, it's true.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. I hope everyone enjoys diving into Enchantress. She deserves it.
And all the hay and all the treats for Bulbasaur and Eevee and Lilu and Tawny.
Yes. Oh, you remembered. Literally, my brother who lives with them doesn't remember.
All right. We'll catch you next time, everyone.
Take care.
Bye.